But Shastri of governors or judges.
Of governors or judges.
Bahutve in the plurality.
In the plurality.
No. Plurality means like many or like that. Siat. There may be. Bahunam of many.
Of many.
Iha in this world. Karmanam.
Persons performing actions.
Shastritvam.
Departmental management.
Upacharaha.
Administration.
He.
Indeed.
Yata.
Just like.
Mandalavartinam.
Of the departmental heads.
Translation. The Yama Dutas continued. Since there are many different karmis or workers, there may be different judges or rulers to give them justice. But just as one central emperor controls different departmental rulers, there must be one supreme controller to guide all the judges. So you can repeat. The Yamadutas continued.
The Yamadutas continued.
Since there are many different karmis, or workers,
there may be different judges,
or rulers to give them justice.
But just as one central emperor
controls different departmental rulers,
there must be one supreme controller
to guide all the judges.
So purport by Svangre Srila Prabhupada,
Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. In governmental management, there may be departmental officials to give justice to different persons, but the law must be one, and that central law must control everyone. The Yamadutas could not imagine the two judges would give two different verdicts in the same case, and therefore they wanted to know who the central judge is. The Yamadutas were certain that Ajamil was a most sinful man, but although Yamaraj wanted to punish him, the Vishnudutas excused him. This was a puzzling situation that the Yamadutas wanted Yamaraj to clarify. So, Kindu Shastri Bahutve Shad Bahunam Miha Karmanam Shastrut Homubicharo He Yatamandala Vartinham. So, Omagada Timbadanda Shah Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Unmeritam Yenatas Mai Shi Purveda Maha. So, this reminds me of Srila Prabhupada's discussion with some scientists, and the scientists were talking about different laws, not governmental laws, but laws of the universe. Like you have the law of gravity, right? Does anyone remember who discovered the law of gravity in the modern time? Sir Isaac Newton, right. He said, what goes up must come down. And there's a famous story that an apple hit him on the head. Somehow, you know that story? An apple hit him on the head and he figured out that things come down. You know, obviously, he figured it out a long time before that. So, there's a law of gravity. There's a law of magnetism. And, of course, the scientists talk about different laws. There's the law of the weak, the strong. I'm not going to tell you what it is. Gravity and electromagnetism. There's four different, what the scientists consider to be universal laws. Anyway. But then Prabhupada would talk about, if there are laws, who has written the laws, right? So there's the laws of the universe, and there's also the laws of justice. And the laws of justice is what's being discussed here, not precisely the laws of the universe. Although they work very much together, because the laws of the universe are also indicate the laws of karma. You know, action and reaction. Just like Newton also said, for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. That's how usually I explain the law of karma to people. Right? For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. Just like if you have a
a pendulum, you push it in one direction, and it goes in another direction. It's interesting. And even even Marx, Karl Marx, understood this point in his dialectical analysis. Has anyone ever read Karl Marx? No. I'm sure you know about this. He talks about thesis, antithesis, and what's the third one? No one knows. You should learn about these things. Your lives are wasted. No, not really. If you chant Hare Krishna, you can go back to Godhead. And synthesis. Do you remember that? You don't remember? You're... Oh, you can't understand. Okay. Can you hear me better? Okay. He talked about thesis, antithesis, and synthesis. I'll tell you what that means. If someone says something, someone says the opposite, and they come together with a synthesis. I mean, putting them both together, so it's called a win-win. Like that. Thesis, antithesis, and synthesis. So, and also, it's a world of dualism, too. You know, talk about action and reaction. You have conservatives and liberals, right? In every situation, every government. And also moderates. Anyway, so getting back to the point of justice, which works very much in tune with the laws of God, because a person who's going to administer justice has to know the laws of the universe, like the law of karma. For example, a king who is going to administer capital punishment has to know the reason behind it, that it's going to relieve the criminal from his reaction. But it's oftentimes not so simple to understand how to administer justice. You know, sometimes devotees tend to be very simplistic. You know, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, like that. But it's not, that's of course from the Bible, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. In other words, if someone hits you in the eye, you hit him in the other eye. And if someone knocks your tooth out, you take one of his teeth out. And if someone's a pickpocket, you cut his hand off. You know, it's pretty simplistic. However, real justice is not like that. It requires a lot of intelligence to ascertain how to administer justice. And I'm going to give you some examples. There's one example from the Mahabharata. Once upon a time, a dog approached Maharaj Yudhisthira for justice. Now, in the Vedic system, anyone could approach the king or emperor for justice. There's some descriptions, even in the historical context, that the king would actually have a rope and a bell outside of his palace so that any citizen could ring it, bing, 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 and he'd have to administer the justice. So there's an interesting story that a dog one time came to Maharaj Yudhisthira and wanted justice. Now, what a sort of justice would a dog want? I mean, that's interesting. Well, what happened was that there was a Brahmin who was beating him. There's some Brahmin in one of the Ramandalis who was beating him. You know, like people beat dogs sometimes. So the dog said, "My dear King Yudhisthira, you're supposed to be equal to everyone because everyone born in the kingdom is called Praja. That means he was born." Prabhupada said that. The king is responsible for the animals, too. The welfare of the animals. Nowadays, the modern kings, governors, presidents, prime ministers, they're only concerned with human beings. It's like last night. We were hearing different tenets, that is, principles of faith of different religions, and they were just concentrated on human beings. Do you remember that? I didn't want to challenge. I had to keep quiet. Because if I said anything, you know, I have a habit of offending people. So it's just like, it says we should consider all humans, whether they have whatever color skin, black, white, blue, purple, chartreuse, red, yellow, whatever, you know, polka dots. So I'm just adding a few to it. We should consider them all equal, which is true. I accept that, too. But what about all the poor animals? What about the animals? You want to keep a dog as a pet, but then you want to eat the cow, the mother cow. So, hypocrites. Anyway. Yastu sarvani bhutaniyat. So we are stewards. Or the king is supposed to be a steward. You know what a steward is? I mean someone who takes care of something else. He's a steward of the environment. He's a steward of the animals, the entities in the kingdom, and of the plants, too. Like even a king has to protect the grass, the trees, and all living entities. So anyway, they have to understand this, that God is the God of all creatures. So getting back to the point. So the dog approached Maharaj Yudhisthira and said, "This Brahmin is beating me." And so he called for his advisors. And the advisors were asked, "What should we do with the Brahmin?" So even the Brahmin was held responsible for acting improperly. This is interesting, too. So they were discussing, what should be done with the Brahmin? Should we beat him? Should we lock him in jail? Should we make him perform 100 Ashwamedha yajnas with his own money? What should we do with him? And everyone was discussing. And the dog said, "I have a suggestion. Can I raise my hand?" "No." "Can I raise my paw?" "Whatever. Can I have a suggestion?" He said, "Make him temple president." And everyone was just like, you know, in charge of the mandali, basically. He didn't say president, but in charge of the ashram. So everyone was thinking, this is crazy. How are you going to reward someone for impious activities by giving them a possession? Isn't that silly? I mean, you don't do that. Just like someone commits a crime, you don't make them, put them in the government. Because, anyway, some governments, they do. But in any case, so that everyone was bewildered, they were discussing, you know, what's happening? This dog, you know, he's a dog, but he has a dog's brain. So, then Yudhisthira Maharaj, being very wise, he asked the dog, you know, "Please tell everybody why you are recommending this as a punishment, which appears to be a reward." And so the dog, Dogubacha, the dog began to speak, you know, he said, Kuta Ubacha. Right? That's Hindi for dog. So Kuta Ubacha, he said, "Well, let me tell you a story. That in my past life, I was temple president." "And because so much nonsense was going on in my ashram, I was responsible to have to take birth as a dog." So this also indicates another law of the universe, law of karma, that if you're in charge of anything, is there too much bass in this, or can we turn up the treble? Because I think there's a lot of reverberation here. If you're in charge of anything, and people under you do things, you have to take part of the karma. Interesting, isn't it? Like the king, he takes like 1/6 of the karma of the kingdom. The temple president, if something's happening with the deity worship, or if something's happening in the ashram, or if there's illicit sex going on, or there's smoking marijuana in the temple. I remember one time many years ago we had a hotel in Miami Beach for our temple, and it had 100 rooms. You couldn't control it. And so through the ventilation system, sometimes we'd smell the marijuana smoke. And we have to run around to all the rooms. Who is smoking? Because we were having guests, not only devotees. So you're responsible. So the dog said, "Because I was doing this, I became a dog. So he should become temple president." So anyone here want to be temple president? Volunteers? You in charge of that? But you're responsible. I mean, like even the guru is responsible for the disciple. It's interesting. Of course, the guru doesn't go to hell and become a dog. Then that, I would resign immediately. But he gets some reaction from what the disciple does. Prabhupada said the reaction that the guru gets is something like either bad dreams, like monster dreams, Godzilla, Dracula, or whatever, or dreams of dying, or he gets sick, or he has legal problems. So even the guru gets a reaction from disciples. So therefore it's described that a guru shouldn't be enthusiastic to have many disciples because it can be dangerous for one's life. So anyway, so there's one story about justice. So it takes some brains to administer justice. It's not really just clear cut. Oh, Manusmita says, cut someone's head off. Another story is a story from the Bhagavatam. And that's the story of Parikshit Maharaj confronting the personality of Kali. So the personality of Kali was involved in animal killing. He was cutting the legs of the bull, beating the cow and cutting the legs of the bull. Of course, the legs of the bull represent the four principles of religiosity: cleanliness, mercifulness, truthfulness, and austerity. And the bull was standing on one leg, and he was urinating because he was so scared. I've seen that with animals, that if you beat them — I don't beat animals, but I've seen animals being beaten, and they actually just pass stool and urine like this. They get some stomach upset. So Parikshit Maharaj confronted him, and he was getting ready to kill Kali. And Kali was dressed like a king. That's another offense. They have a low-class person dressed as a high-class person. That's a great offense, because a Shudra was dressed as a king. In another instance, Lord Ramchandra had a Shudra who was dressed as a Brahmin, and Lord Ramchandra cut his head off. That's a story from the Ramayana. Anyway, the Shudra was dressed as the king, and Parikshit Maharaj was getting ready to cut his head off, and what did the Shudra did? Said, "Please help me, I surrender unto you." So once he surrendered, the rule was you're not supposed to kill someone who surrenders. So, you know, this is pretty heavy. And he said, "Not only am I surrendering to you, but I want some place to live." So Parikshit Maharaj had to arrange for Kali to live somewhere. You can imagine justice, you know, it's not so clear how to administer justice. And of course, Parikshit Maharaj gave him all sorts of interesting places to reside, where intoxication, illicit sex, gambling, and meat eating are there. So practically, once you step outside the temple, then Kali's there. Or, if people are not following in the ashram, Kali is there. Kali manifests himself wherever these four principles are not being followed. It's interesting. And not only that, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that sometimes people who are not devotees join the Krishna consciousness movement, and he called them Kali Chelas. That's interesting. So Kali, like, tries to manifest himself. He's a little tricky. Also, Kali can be wherever there is, what, hoarding of, anyone remember? Gold. It doesn't mean that wherever you have gold, there's Kali. I mean, it's not that the ladies should get rid of all their ornaments and give them to the sannyasi that melt down and sell here and make money and build a temple. But that would be nice. I could make that point, but I'm not going to. But Kali, you know, Kali is anywhere where there is too much gold. Even there's some story about Parikshit Maharaj when he put the snake around that Brahmin, Samaku Rishi. There's the story that he had too much gold on his head. You know that story? He had a gold crown and so much gold. So there was the influence. Kali just like entered into that gold and somehow or other influenced his mind. So one shouldn't have too much gold. I mean, a little gold ring is all right if you're married. No, no rings. But you're married. What about your wife? You have a gold ring. No. You're afraid of Kali? You're afraid of duck voice. That's more practical. So anyway, so whenever there's hoarding of gold or even money, it actually pollutes the consciousness. When one has too much money or any opulence, it pollutes the consciousness and one succumbs to the argumentation that is the specialty of Kali, whenever there's fighting like that. Like Prabhupada gave the example that in the Gaudiya Math in Calcutta, which is called the Bagh Bazar Math, as soon as they built this beautiful building, what did the devotees do? They were fighting over rooms. Can you imagine that? These are all sannyasis. And brahmacharis, you know, really renounced. And they were fighting. This is my room. No! My room! This has a nice view to it. No, get out of this room. And there was a big fight, and what did Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur say to Srila Prabhupada? Does anyone remember? He said, that since I've constructed this, there's been a big fight, and also there'll be a fire in the moth. And he said, if I could sell the marble from the temples and distribute books, I would do it. It's an interesting statement. He made that statement to Prabhupada while they were walking on the banks of the Radhakund. And Prabhupada understood that and took it as one of his life's mission, not to acquire too much opulence in the name of Krishna consciousness. It's very, very important. The devotee has to be Vairagya Vidya. So then, of course, later on the Gaudiya Math did fight, and the Gaudiya Math split up on account of that, of too much opulence. There's so many examples of this. So that's another example of basically justice. You know, how do you administer justice? So we use the Maharaj Pariksit and Kali to illustrate that point. And so the third example I'm going to give is from the Ramayana, since the Ram Navami is coming up. So Ram was very expert in administering justice. And the story that comes to mind from the Ramayana is his interactions with Bali. Bali was, of course, the king of the monkeys. Monkey king. And he was living in Kishkindha. And we all know that Bali had driven out Sugriva. And the reason he had driven out Sugriva, there was this misunderstanding that when Bali was fighting this demon, what was the demon's name he fought in the cave? Does anyone remember? I don't remember right now. Dundubi. That was the name. You don't remember. How can I remember? You're all Ram Bhaktas. And I'm a Krishna Bhakta, and I know that. So he was fighting this demon. Big demon. And he went into a cave, and Sugriva was stationed outside the cave. He was guarding the cave. And Sugriva heard the sounds coming from the cave, and finally he saw blood coming from the cave. And he thought, Bali has been killed. And so what he did is he put a stone on the entrance to the cave. And then he went back. He was very sorry. He went back to the kingdom of Kishkindha. And he said, Bali has left his body. So they decided to make Sugriva king. So he was crowned king. But what happened actually is Bali did not die. This demon had died. I think it was Mayavi instead of Dundubi. Anyway, there's so many demons Bali killed. Bali was very strong. He could hold Ravana under his armpit. When Ravana came to attack him, he put Ravana under his armpit. Can you imagine being under a monkey's armpit? Disgusting. So, and he would fly with Ravana to all the holy places, you know, like that, under his armpit. So Bali was very strong. So what happened is that Bali kicked out, not only kicked out Sugriva, he threatened Sugriva, And Sugriva had to take shelter at Mount Rishimukh. And he was safe there because Bali had been cursed not to be able to come there because Bali had desecrated the place when he kicked this Dundubi's bones away. And some blood fell on the sage's ashram there. Anyway, so Bali hated Sugriva. He wanted to kill Sugriva. And Bali was much more, he was stronger than Sugriva. But then Lord Ramachandra came, and Lord Ramachandra, of course, was looking for Sita Devi, and he was trying to enlist the help of the monkeys. So when Lord Ramachandra came, he made friendship with Sugriva, and he recognized his eternal servant, Hanuman, which is nice. And he told Sugriva that he would kill Bali. So what happened is that he told Sugriva to have a fight with Bali, and then Lord Ram would shoot the arrow at Bali. So Sugriva went to the door of Kishkinda and said, "Bali, come and fight! Ah, Bali, Bali!" And Bali got really angry, came, and he had a fight with Sugriva. But at that particular juncture, Lord Ramchandra couldn't distinguish between the two of them, you know, because they were brothers. Of course, not complete brothers, they were half brothers. Sugriva was the son of the sun god, and Bali was Indra's son. So they were half brothers. There's a whole story, I'm not going to tell the story of how that happens. But Aruna was the mother. And Aruna had taken the form of a female. So anyway, Aruna is the charioteer of the sun god. But that's another story from the Ramayana, which we'll reserve for later. So what happened is that first time, Lord Ram couldn't distinguish the two of them, so Sugriva really got beaten up badly. He had bruises all over his body. And he said to Lord Ramchandra, "Why? Why didn't you kill my brother Bali?" And Lord Ramchandra said, "You know, I could have killed you by accident, so next time you wear a garland." So they put this garland on. Not this garland. And so Lord Ramchandra hid behind the tree and he took his arrow. Of course, Bali's body was as strong as a stone. Actually, stronger than a stone. So Lord Ramchandra previously proved that his arrow could pierce through stone and trees because he shot these seven tall trees, you know that story? And the arrow went all the way through there. Not only went through there, it went down all the way through the earth and came back again. And landed in the quiver of Lord Ram. Pretty good arrow, isn't it? Later on, those trees were sent back to Godhead by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, getting to the story of justice. I mean, getting more into the Ramayana and justice. So, getting to the story of justice, Lord Ram finally killed Bali. And Bali, he started to accuse Lord Ram as he was dying. He said, you're supposed to be the epitome of justice. Yet you hid behind the tree and killed me like that. And you took Sugriva's side. Had you approached me, I could have helped you get Sita back immediately. Because I fought with Ravana already and I defeated him. So why is it you killed me? You've become irreligious. So he was accusing him of not having the proper judgment. But Lord Ram, he said to Bali, he said, actually, under the jurisdiction, you know, so religious and so much understanding the principle of justice, he said, under the jurisdiction of Bart, who is now the king, I am functioning to make sure religious principles are protected all over the earth. And what you have done is irreligious. You're a criminal. You've usurped your brother's position, threatened your brother, and not only that, you try to take your brother's wife, Ruma. Because Ruma was Sugriva's wife and Tara was Bali's wife. So you tried to take your brother's wife, which is the sinful activity by force, and you tried to kill your brother. Therefore, the justice is that I should kill you. And when Bali heard that, he said, yes, you're right. I've understood. That's the principle of justice. So I've told these stories to illustrate the point that it's not so easy to understand. In fact, the Mahabharata, you know, what is the right thing to do as far as administering justice? The Mahabharata tells us, Tarko, Pratishta, Shrutina, Nabina. You can't understand Dharma by logic, reasoning, or even Shrutina. Vibina, by studying the Vedic literatures, because you'll find so many different injunctions in the Vedic literatures. Justice injunctions, you'll find the Manusmriti, you'll find the original Vedas, there's some justice things. The Bhagavatam, there's some things. Guhitam, Nihaya. So the principles of justice, or the principle of Dharma, which sometimes is equated with justice, is hidden in the hearts of the pure devotees. And therefore, Mahajaniyena Gata Sapanta. The way to understand what's right and what's wrong is to follow the path chalked out, as Prabhupada used the word chalked out, by the Mahajanas or the great devotees. So this is our principle. So right now in ISKCON, I mean getting down to the modern day and age, we're discussing different principles of religion. One principle is very interesting for all you devotees to understand is whether women can be gurus in ISKCON. You've heard about this controversy? No. We have this discussion going on now on the GBC. Naturally, as I mentioned before, you have your conservatives and liberals. Your liberals say yes, of course, and the conservatives say no. We men are the best. And they pick some quotes out, even out of the Bhagavad Gita, that Papa Yonia, you know that verse? That they say, well, woman is a sinful birth. But actually, everybody's a sinful birth in Kali. Anyway, so that, as we say, different shlokas for different folks. You ever hear the saying before? Different slokas for different folks. So in other words, you can pick quotes out of the Vedic literatures to justify almost any point of view. I mean, if you want to eat meat, you could find quotes. Offer your goat to the goddess Kali, and you chant Mamsa Khadati once a month. So every month, you go to the hill the full moon day. All you should do that. You can eat goats. No meat, fish, or eggs, but goats. All right. You know, so you'll find a quote in the Vedic literature that just, and even drinking liquor. There's a whole ceremony, it's called the Sodomini or something like ceremony, where you can offer the liquor and drink it. Isn't that nice? You know, the hell with these four regulative principles. We have to be Vedic. So this whole discussion is going on right now in the GBC. Unfortunately, I've been appointed to write the paper. You know, that means I become everyone's enemy. But because I was the one who recommended a particular lady to become a guru. It's a very nice lady. Her name is Narayani. And it's become very controversial. And many of the Indian temple leaders are threatening, you know, we're going to resign if a woman becomes a guru. And the people from the West are saying, go for it. So it's really a divisive issue. Wait, let me finish, Nishinit. It's a divisive, you know what divisive means? It divides people. So it's very difficult to understand. But then, if you refer to Prabhupada, Mahajaniyena Gata Sapanta, what did Prabhupada say? Prabhupada said, I want every one of my disciples, all you boys and girls, to become gurus. Very simple. Amare gai guru hoi tore desh. And devotional service is not on the bodily platform. Like Prabhupada said, you know, all these injunctions about women and men and things like that, but Prabhupada said that a woman is a Vaishnavi, then her association is first class. So devotional service or Krishna consciousness or bhakti yoga or Bhagavat Vidhi, which we're following, does not discriminate according to the different bodies and whatever, you know, Brahman, Kshatriyas, Vaishya, Shudras, If one's chanting the holy name, he's automatically come to the platform being Brahman. Whatever your background is. In fact, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur in the Harinam Chintamani, if you consider a Vaishnava's body, bodily problems, past sinful activities, or even accidental slips right now, that's an offense against the Vaishnava. So in other words, when we reach a decision as far as justice, management in the Krishna, or dharma, let's say that's a bigger word that encompasses everything, it should be based upon the acharyas. Not that you just pick and choose different verses to justify. I mean, like sometimes people pick this verse from Chanakapanda. Oh, actually, Tulsidas and Chanakapanda also say you beat your mridanga dog and your wife. You know, you ever heard that? What? They become better. You know, you're beating the mridanga, it makes a nice sound. Beat your dog, it's better. We find that Yudhisthira Maharaj, he punished the Brahmin by making him temple president because he beat his dog. And Prabhupada said, you know, if anyone touches their wife improperly, Prabhupada said he would beat them or beats children. So really we have to understand what our acharyas or how our acharyas have applied Krishna consciousness or applied the Vedas for the modern day and age. This is extremely important to understand. Not that you simply take things out of context and justify any damn thing you want to justify. Everybody understands the point? So, we have to greet the deities. I think we've gone on too long. At least it was interesting, the last part that Lady Gurus. So, all glories to Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai.